And for you, a special invitation to attend to this evening's Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, Cambridge's Community Radio, with your host, Robert Louis Abrahamson. We can also be found online at momentsunderlamplight.com, where you can listen again to the show as podcast and share your comments with others. Find our page too on Facebook. Here's Axel standing by to help us through the show this evening and, as always, to support us with his enthusiasm that makes me think, yes, maybe this choice of music isn't all that bad. Perhaps you'll think so too. There are so many different pieces I could choose for each show, and, you know, sometimes I just wonder if I made the right choice, or maybe I should have picked some other kind of music or other theme or... Hey, wait. I'm just wandering from the point here, and that's not good. Aha! Unless the theme for this evening under lamplight happens to be wandering, which in fact it does. But does that excuse me from wandering as I speak to you? Well, let's spend some time wandering together, or exploring wandering, and rambling, and just moving along without a particular aim in mind. The first thing we come upon on our wandering is an announcement, a little roadside billboard with a message from Malcolm Geit, who has invited Jerry Nicosia to Cambridge later this month. Jerry Nicosia has written an acclaimed biography of Jack Kerouac and was a friend of Ginsberg and was a beat poet himself. He will give a lecture on Friday, 22nd of October, entitled The Writer Kerouac, The Mythological Kerouac, The Popular Kerouac, and The Real Kerouac. You can attend by showing up at 5 p.m. in the English Faculty Building on 9 West Road. The lecture is free. A public service, I suppose we would call it, of Cambridge University. The following night, Saturday the 23rd October, Jerry Nicosia will give a poetry reading and performance with members of the Rip Rap Quartet and supporting performances from K.E.M. Dursley and Malcolm Geit at the Memorial Church, the Unitarian Church, Emmanuel Road, CB1 1JW, at 8 p.m. Tickets will cost £5 on the door. This theme of wandering came to me a few weeks ago when I was sitting in Johnson Chapel at Amherst College, surrounded by austere portraits of past presidents of the college back at my old campus, and yet a returning only as a wanderer, not a resident, since I was just stopping there for a few days in the progress of a journey that wandered over many other places on the East Coast. It was a conference for the Association for Contemplative Mind in Higher Education, and I was sitting listening to the keynote address given by Stephen Prothero on the topic, The Art of Doing Nothing, Wandering as Contemplative Practice. I took notes, as I often do, to keep my mind from wandering and to preserve details for myself later on. Stephen spoke of the need to rescue the idea of wandering, and I see in my notebook that my mind began wandering at this point. I wrote, a good term to pick up and use more often, maybe even for lamplight. And then I was off, listening to the talk to be sure, but also forming notes for the show, a list of readings and of music and of ideas to bring in to our discussion here. But what was it Stephen Prothero actually said about wandering as a contemplative practice? People alert to the deeper movements within have always known that valuable religious insights can come to those who wander. Sometimes wandering is seen as a punishment. Think of Cain, exiled and wandering after murdering his brother Abel. Sometimes wandering is seen as an image of all human life. We are sojourners here on earth, with our true home somewhere else. Or sometimes wandering is a course of life chosen by saintly people to break away from lesser bonds of life and keep them alert to the essential things that really matter. And then there is the sense of wandering as a pleasure in itself, as we move without aim, perhaps lost, perhaps finding ourselves at home wherever we happen to be. As wanderers, we must let go of attachments and be mindful of what draws us further. We're not in charge now, but something higher is leading us onward, or something deeper within us. The book of Exodus gives us the image of the cloud of smoke by day and the glow of flaming fire by night, which led the Israelites in their 40-year wanderings in the desert. The smoke and the fire, images of the outer and the inner guides for each of us as we wander. Stephen proposed wandering as an antidote to our purpose-driven culture, where we are told by authority figures to stop playing around and take control of our own lives. But that limits us only to what we know. If we wander, perhaps we'll stumble on much more than we might otherwise know. Our peripheral vision has a lot to tell us, and we will be much more likely to be playful, which is a joy in itself. Of course, there are dangers and risks to wandering, not least, as people pointed out in the question period after the talk, the way the wanderer might just abandon those left behind. Where's your sense of responsibility for others? We can sometimes do harm by just walking off on a wander. That reminds us that wandering is not intrinsically good in itself, but good only insofar as we can bring certain qualities to the activity. A heart and a mind on the alert to what is leading us and what is around us and merging into us as we move. And let's stop now for a bit of music. What might be appropriate here? Let's try this. Blue Jay Way from the Beatles' Magical Mystery Tour, with its sense of the wanderers in the fog of L.A., getting lost on their way to visit the singer of the song, who pleads to them, please don't be long, please don't you be very long, don't be long. But the music itself is foggy, one thing merging into another. In George Harrison's attempt to capture in music the contemplative merging and unity. And the song ends with don't be long turning into don't belong. The theme, we might say, of wanderers who, if they do belong anywhere, it's not where they are right now.
There's a fog upon LA, and my friends have lost their way. Now they've lost themselves instead. I know.
thanks George Harrison and your friends, the Beatles, for Blue Jay Way, reminding us that we may be a long time wandering because we are haunted by the thought that we don't belong. Yet let's not suppose that wanderers are going around in a daze. True wandering requires a dual action. First, a detachment from possessiveness, the don't belong attitude, letting go, opening to whatever may be leading us, to the apparent randomness of our movements. And then second, a sharpness of our attention on what our senses are telling us. Where exactly are we? Oh, we may be lost and not know where we are in relation to somewhere else, but we try to be as clear as possible about what it's like to be here. Thoreau is the writer we want to turn to next, as he tells us about his wandering over the New England countryside, alert to what his senses tell him, sauntering with his eye, as he puts it. I must walk with more free senses. I must let my senses wander as my thoughts, my eyes see without looking. I have the habit of attention to such excess that my senses get no rest, but suffer from a constant strain. Be not preoccupied with looking. Go not to the object, let it come to you. When I have found myself ever looking down and confining my gaze to the flowers, I have thought it might be well to get into the habit of observing the clouds as a corrective. But no, that study would be just as bad. What I need is not to look at all, but a true sauntering of the eye. When we walk, we naturally go to the fields and woods. What would become of us if we walked only in a garden or a mall? Of course, it is of no use to direct our steps into the woods if they do not carry us thither. I am alarmed when it happens that I have walked a mile into the woods bodily without getting there in spirit. In my afternoon walk, I would fain forget all my morning occupations and my obligations to society. But it sometimes happens that I cannot easily shake off the village. The thought of some work will run in my head, and I am not where my body is. I am out of my senses. In my walks, I would fain return to my senses. What business have I in the woods if I am thinking of something out of the woods? Let's just repeat that final line. What business have I in the woods if I am thinking of something out of the woods? That is to say, what business have I wandering if my mind is still stuck at home? Or, by extension, what business have I mowing the lawn if my mind is still stuck inside at my desk, or mulling over the disagreement I just had with a neighbor, or planning how I will spend the next free evening? Here's a question. Why did the Buddhist monk wash the dishes? The answer? In order to wash the dishes. What business has he washing the dishes if he is thinking of something other than washing the dishes? Yes, Thoreau is tough, and he admits it himself. Probably his shortest sentence occurs in the middle of his treatise on civil disobedience, when he is asking us to live up to the dictates of our conscience. This is hard, he says. And that's right. But he's done it before us, has Thoreau. And since we started talking about Buddhist monks, here's a little story about wandering minds. Once upon a time, there were two Buddhist monks belonging to a very strict order. The kind of order that was so strict that none of the monks were ever allowed to go anywhere near a woman. One monk was very old and very wise. The other, a novice, bright and willing to undergo all the hardships of the order. They were on a journey somewhere one day, perhaps just wandering around. They came to a river bank where they heard someone weeping and soon saw a beautiful young woman sitting crying. "What is the matter?" said the old monk, while the young monk did his best to look away and block up his ears and hum to himself to keep her voice from intruding. I have to get across the river, the woman said. My grandmother is ill and I am going to nurse her. But I cannot swim and the river is wide and deep and I'm afraid I won't make it across. Can you help me? Yes, I can, said the old monk. And he stooped down and told her to climb onto his shoulders. And so she did, pulling up her skirts to her waist so she could wrap her bare legs around the monk's chest for greater security. The monk then waded into the river and swam when it got deeper, and soon they were on the other side. The monk stooped down and the woman climbed off his shoulders, thanked him profusely, and went on her way. And so did the monks. They wandered along for 4 hours, when suddenly the young monk stopped and turned angrily to the older monk. "I can't believe it," he said. "I mean, you know we're not even allowed to hear a woman's voice, but you actually talked to one and let her touch you and had her bare legs and her ankles and her feet right around your chest and her bare other parts on your shoulder, and you call yourself a holy man? You're supposed to be such a hypocrite. How can you live with yourself?" "My son," said the old man, "I put that woman down as soon as I got to the riverbank, but you've been carrying her on your shoulders for 4 hours." That was Cheng Yu playing the classical Chinese pipa with a piece called Moon over Guanshan to follow our story of the two Buddhist monks. But you know, as I was thinking about this, it occurred to me that I'll bet this was originally a Yiddish story and only recently became transferred to the Buddhist context. You can hear how the punchline is supposed to go, can't you? The young Frommer exclaims, "You call yourself a holy man. You're a hypocrite. Pfeh, I'm through with you." And the old Rebbe replies, "Hypocrite. I put that woman down when I got to the riverbank, but you, for the past 4 hours, you're still carrying her on your shoulders." Okay, I get it. Let's move on. Here's another reading about wandering, something that arrived in the post only very recently. It's found in the new Leonard Cohen album, the second collection of songs from his recent marathon tour, this album with a title quite suitable to our theme, Songs from the Road. Here's what Leon Vesteltier says in his essay, The Art of Wandering, contained in the booklet that comes with the album. It certainly helps explain how wandering can become a contemplative practice by leading us away from looking for what we can get out of life to opening to just what lies there before us. We don't wander to get anywhere, we wander just to wander. Here's what he says. The road is not a line between places, it is a place between places, a place of its own. You cannot understand the ravishments of the road unless you overcome the logistical way of looking at things, which is perhaps the most powerful impediment that our hustling way of life puts in the way of experience. Since we cling to a mainly instrumental view of the road, we have forgotten how to be travelers and we are tourists instead, sitting still before the window and watching the world speed past when, in fact, we are the ones who are speeding, and it is the world that is still for those who possess the capacity for stillness. We are too enamored of destinations. We hunger too much for arrival. We treat the road as an interval between meanings, an interregnum between dispensations, and so we are blinded to the richness of meanings and dispensation in the road itself. If departure is the past and arrival is the future, then the road is the present. And there's nothing more spiritually difficult or spiritually rewarding than learning to live significantly in the present. This is accomplished by a schooling in transience, and the road is such a school. Almost as powerfully as the sea and the sky, the road is an emblem of immensity. The horizon into which it disappears is the promise of a release, which is the promise of a horizon, which is the promise of a release. From the stretch of even the most ordinary road, you may infer a suggestion of infinity. Talk about wandering. That was Paganini's fifth caprice in A, played by the wonderful Jack Glatzer, wandering across the whole range of violin possibilities, from the lowest note up to what he calls the area of eternal rosin. There's that suggestion of infinity Wieseltier was talking about. If you were able to attend Jack's concerts this past summer in the Cambridge Summer Music Festival, you would have heard Jack speaking about each caprice, but luckily he has released an album with all 24 caprices, plus his short discussions of each. Here's what he says about the caprice we've just heard.
The Fifth Caprice shows us how Paganini breaks the bounds of classical violin playing in several ways. It begins with great passages showing the entire range of the violin of Paganini. On practically the lowest note on the G string, we go up a mere 3 octaves in arpeggios and then descending in a rather torrential scale. Then each time the arpeggios reach a little bit higher until the fourth time we reach the highest note, highest practical note, that is, of the violin, a high A, 4 octaves over the first note. This is an area which we violinists like to call the area of eternal Rosin, a high, searing, piercing note that had hardly ever been imagined before, not to speak of being heard by audiences. This is part of the Promethean side of Paganini, that he wasn't content to stop where others had stopped, and he explored the violin to such a degree that the fingerboard had to be made longer during his lifetime. There's a very beautiful remark by a critic called A.B. Marx, who speaks of Paganini's originality, and I think it's worth quoting this. "This was not violin playing. This was not music. It was witchcraft. And yet still it was music, only not the kind to which we are accustomed." The second section, agitato, agitated, is a wild, demonic witch's dance. It's so fast the fingers don't really have time to press down the strings, but they only touch very lightly and then off they go so another finger can come down. And then the bow corresponds with this in simply playing very fast ricochets, constantly bouncing. Demonic quality is felt throughout this work. Goethe described the experience of Paganini. "I only heard something meteoric and then couldn't account for it." And this middle section is like a meteor. It seems to come from nothing and goes away in a flash.
That's good. A meteor, as Goethe called Paganini's playing. And as Jack says, it seems to come from nothing and goes away in a flash. Meteors are the great wanderers of the heavens, after all. Oh, and by the way, Jack practices the violin 6 hours a day. We may not want to call that wandering, but it's certainly a contemplative practice. But let's not lose touch with the road just yet. We always read something from Stevenson on Evening Under Lamplight, but this week it's especially important, since he was known, among other things, as a writer about walking tours. In his 20s, before his health broke down, he would frequently go off on walking tours through Ayrshire in the winter, through Buckinghamshire in autumn, and perhaps most famously in the Cévennes in France, travelling with a donkey. Here's a passage from his essay called Walking Tours, in which he picks up the ideas we have just been looking at, but brings to life some of what it actually feels like to wander just for the sake of wandering, just for the joy of the wandering in itself. "Now, to be properly enjoyed, a walking tour should be gone upon alone. If you go in a company or even in pairs, it is no longer a walking tour in anything but name. It is something else, and more in the nature of a picnic. A walking tour should be gone upon alone because freedom is of the essence, because you should be able to stop and go on and follow this way or that as the freak takes you, and because you must have your own pace and neither trot alongside a companion walker nor mince in time with a girl. And then you must be open to all impressions, and let your thoughts take colour from what you see. You should be as a pipe for any wind to play upon. I cannot see the wit, says Hazlitt, of walking and talking at the same time. When I am in the country, I wish to vegetate like the country." Which is the gist of all that can be said upon the matter. There should be no cackle of voices at your elbow to jar on the meditative silence of the morning. And so long as a man is reasoning, he cannot surrender himself to that fine intoxication that comes of much motion in the open air, that begins in a sort of dazzle and sluggishness of the brain, and ends in a peace that passes comprehension. In the course of a day's walk, you see, there is much variance from the mood. In the exhilaration of the start to the happy phlegm of the arrival, the change is certainly great. As the day goes on, the traveller moves from the one extreme towards the other. He becomes more and more incorporated with the material landscape, and the open-air drunkenness grows upon him with great strides until he posts along the road and sees everything about him as in a cheerful dream. The first is certainly brighter, but the second stage is the more peaceful. A man does not make so many articles towards the end, nor does he laugh aloud, but the purely animal pleasures, the sense of physical well-being, the delight of every inhalation, of every time the muscles tighten down the thigh, console him for the absence of the others, and bring him to his destination still content.
Let us leave the city where the black smoke blows. When the wind comes calling, let us go, go, go. It's the west wind calling, it's the wind that's free. Come away and wander on the road with me. Then give us a road that stretches far, by the moor of Ranachar, by dark Lochnagar, by the glens of Angus, or by Deeside Fair. On the road of summer you will find us there. Shoulder up your bundles, throw away your cares. There's no place for worries on the highway there. When the sun is dawning with the promise gay, and the hills are calling, come away, come away. Then give us a road that stretches far, by the moor of Rannoch, or by dark Lochnagar, by the glens of Angus, or by Deeside Fair. On the road of summer you will find us there. There's a thousand roads and we shall walk them all, till the songbirds leave us and the white snows fall. Then we'll dream all winter of the great spring day, when the wind shall call us, come away, come away. Then give us a road that stretches far, by the moor of Rannoch, or by dark Lochnagar, by the glens of Angus, or by Deeside Fair. On the road of summer you will find us there. On the road of summer you will find us there.
That was Andy Stewart celebrating the exhilaration of taking the summer road through the Highlands with a song called The Summer Road. He begins by saying, "Let us leave the city where the black smoke blows. When the wind comes calling, let us go, go, go." Not the deepest lyrics, but that's not the point. When you live in the industrial black smoke areas, Glasgow for instance, you will, let's hope, always be impelled by the fresh winds to go off wandering in the countryside. But that's not the only kind of wandering. What about wandering in the city? I remember I used to do that in London many years ago. I would take whichever bus first arrived and ride to the end of the line and then walk back to where I was staying. A wandering route, of course, and full of sights to keep me in my senses. And many people have the ambition to come to the big city and wander around its famous streets. This is what the Kinks celebrate in our next song called Life on the Road, the story of another one of Ray Davies's poor little guys whose ambition was to wander around London. And is he content or just lost? We get a whole catalogue of place names. Ray Davies, among other things, is the poet of London place names. "It was always my ambition to see Piccadilly, ramble and roam around Soho and Pimlico and Savile Road, and walk down the Abbey Road." And so what happens once he packs his bags and heads to London? When I arrived in Euston, I was little more than a child, and I didn't know then that the dives and the dens would be so vulgar and wicked and wild. Uh-huh. That's the same old story, isn't it? Mama always told me the city ladies were bawdy and bold, and so I searched night and day to catch a kissable lady, but... Yes, but... This is a kink's hero, after all, but... All that I caught was a cold. 'Cause those stuck-up city ladies didn't notice me walk by. Now I've got holes in my shoes 'cause I've been walking the streets at night. But he can console himself that he's a free man, doing what he pleases in the old tradition of the tramp and the outsider. And I'm living the life that I chose, living my life on the road. So here we go. A soft opening, delicate and sweet. Then he hits London.
Ever since I was a child, I love to wander wild through the bright city lights and find myself a life I could call my own. It was always my ambition to see Piccadilly, ramble and roam around Soho and Pimlico and Savile. Shoes, 'cause I've been walking the streets all night. Shut eyes, 'cause I've been walking the streets all night. Friends, and see all the places that I used to know, and say goodbye to a world that's too real, but goodbye to a world that's forgotten how to feel. And it's slowly using me, and there's no security. Sometimes I hate the road, but it's the only life I know. But I'm living the life that I chose, so I'll live out my life on the road.
Give me life on the road. I said life on the road. I said life on the road. Give me life on the road.
You attended to what happened to this wanderer in London? The inevitable looking back to the comforts of the life he'd left behind. That temptation that always faces wanderers ever since the Israelites wandered in the desert, free now but longing for the flesh pots of Egypt. He says, "One of these days I want to go home, visit my friends and see all the places that I used to know. And say goodbye to a world that's too real. Goodbye to a world that's forgotten how to feel. And it's slowly using me, and there's no security. Sometimes I hate the road, but it's the only life I know." Ah, poor fellow. Do we feel sorry for him, or is he just a schlemiel who bought the hype about the glamour of the wanderer? I'm not sure where we are at the end of the song. Maybe, in fact, we are invited to wander between various feelings about this guy, and that's okay too. Oh, and speaking of being invited, you are invited, as you know, to attend this evening under lamplight here on Cambridge 105, Cambridge Community Radio, to our discussions about wandering. You and me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, wandering through all these different things. In fact, I know you are already attending the show in one sense, but only you know just how attentively you are attending to all the readings and music we are sharing together this evening. But what makes this young man so eager to live the life of the road, even if the road is Piccadilly Circus or Savile Row? What is this ideal of the loner out on the road, the wanderer, as we're calling the archetype this evening? All literatures have their early examples of the wanderer. In Greek literature, of course, there's the great wanderer Odysseus, described in the first line of the Odyssey as polytropos, that is, many-placed, which can also imply many-faceted. The wanderer is complex and slippery, hard to pin down, just like Odysseus. In Norse mythology, Odin used to put on a disguise and wander the earth. One of the earliest English poems from sometime between the 6th and the 9th centuries is a poem called The Wanderer, a sad monologue by a man whose lord and fellows and whole community have been wiped out. And he only is escaped alone to tell us. Part of the poem is a list of questions the Erdstapa, or wanderer, asks in the face of all the losses that have hit him. These are ubi est questions. Where is? What has become of my past life? He must wander because he has no past, no anchor in time or place. Without an anchor, he can only drift, wander, waiting, perhaps in hope, perhaps not, for what might come next. Where quam erg, he asks, where quam mago? Where is the horse gone? Where the rider? Where the giver of treasure? Where are the seats at the feast? Where are the revels in the hall? Alas for the bright cup, alas for the mailed warrior, alas for the splendor of the prince. How that time has passed away, dark under the cover of night, swahie nowhere, as if it had never been. Spenser's Faerie Queen, like the medieval romances before it, is all about knights errant or wandering. Gradually, as the Romantic movement picked up pace, the wanderers became artists, bards most often, sensitive creators of beautiful things, different from the ordinary people and thus exiled from the community, by the community's command or by their own wishes. Here, for instance, we see the bard reappear in the opening stanzas of Sir Walter Scott's Lay of the Last Minstrel, wandering, blind, out of his own times, living on in a new age unappreciated, and as Scott clearly intends, an object of deep sympathy from all of us sensitive readers. Here's the first stanza of this long poem, which, in fact, I produced an annotated edition of as my PhD project. It feels odd for me to come back to the poem after so many years. Let's see if any of it still stands up. It certainly captured the popular imagination when it first appeared in 1805. The way was long, the wind was cold, the minstrel was infirm and old. His withered cheek and tresses grey seemed to have known a better day. The harp, his sole remaining joy, was carried by an orphan boy. The last of all the bards was he who sung of border chivalry. For well-a-day, their date was fled, his tuneful brethren all were dead, and he, neglected and oppressed, wished to be with them and at rest. No more on prancing palfrey borne, he carolled, light as lark at morn. No longer courted and caressed, high placed in hall, a welcome guest, he poured to lord and lady gay the unpremeditated lay. Old times were changed, old manners gone. A stranger filled the Stuart's throne. The bigots of an iron time had called his harmless art a crime. A wandering harper, scorned and poor, he begged his bread from door to door, and tuned, to please a peasant's ear, the harp a king had loved to hear. That was Janet Harbison playing a tune called Sheila from her album O'Neill's Piper, a tune perhaps not very different from that played by Walter Scott's romantic bard, the last of all the bards, wandering displaced through the Scottish borders. Let's not leave the romantic period without also bringing in that most famous of eerie wanderers, Coleridge's Ancient Mariner, who committed a grave sin by shooting the innocent albatross, and is condemned to wander the world at sudden moments impelled to stop someone passing by and pour out to this person his whole confessional tale. I pass, he says, like night from land to land. I have strange power of speech. That moment that his face I see, I know the man that must hear me. To him my tale I teach. No, this is not going to be a historical survey of the figure of the wanderer, but we do want to bring the image up to the 20th century with the character of the hobo, the tramp. Charlie Chaplin comes to mind here, doesn't he? And then the Woody Guthrie hero, the quasi-outlaw, riding the rails, catching a meal where he can, traveling across from California to the New York Island. And while we're here, let's stop and visit the very young Bob Dylan, who wrote and recorded at home this song called Rambler Gambler, his attempt to catch on to the glamour of the loner, wandering around the place.
I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, I'm a long way from my home. If the people don't like me, they can't leave me alone. I'll sit down beside you, come sit down right here, come sit down along with me, won't you? Love you boys so dear.
He's a rambler gambler, so he says. But is he a nice guy? I'm a rambler, I'm a gambler, I'm a long way from my home. If the people don't like me, they can leave me alone. He certainly knows who he is. And maybe that's an important aspect of wandering. I know one of the reasons to wander is to discover more about ourselves. But if we start wandering without even knowing just a little bit about who we are, then don't we run the danger of, well, blowing away? Not everyone can just up and start wandering. There is the hermit or the monk who stays still and goes deeply into self-discovery, and there is the wanderer who picks up his or her self-knowledge and wanders around to expand this knowledge through contact with the rest of the world. All the world is changing, but perhaps the true wanderer, detached and observant, is the one constant, though always moving, point on the landscape. As the young Dylan concludes, oh, there's changes in the ocean, there's changes in the sea, there's changes in my true love, ain't no change in me. Now, that's either very stupid or very wise. Let's give him credit for the benefit of the doubt. Dylan's subsequent career showed us that we can count on him to get it right almost all the time. There was so much else I wanted to share with you about wandering, not least the rambler par excellence, my dear Samuel Johnson, who wrote a series of essays called The Rambler, some of the wisest, though not the easiest, essays in English. And there are those songs that glorify the wanderer when in fact they're just looking for excuses to move on from one girl to another. Junior Walker and the All-Stars, for instance, with I'm a Roadrunner. Don't want no woman to tie me down. Gotta be free, baby, to roam around. All my life I've been like this. If you love me, it's your own risk. When the dust hit my shoe, I got the urge to move. And there's Dion and the Belmonts singing about the wanderer who proclaims himself the type of guy that likes to roam around. I'm never in one place. I roam from town to town. And when I find myself fallen for some girl, yeah, I hop right into that car of mine and I drive around the world. But this isn't really a wanderer, as we know by this point in our show. It's a runaway. But he, too, has his place in the popular American culture and thus, as things go, in world culture. We want to end this evening, under lamplight, with a song that seems to be about this kind of guy, the wanderer who shows up at a woman's door and then, after a while, announces that the woman caused his will to weaken with her love and warmth and shelter, and then he's off, just like the others. I'm talking about Leonard Cohen's Stranger Song from his first album. The interesting thing is that the song is addressed to the woman by some third party, and this alters our whole perspective. Catch Dion and the Belmonts being so subtle. It's a haunting song, as the woman herself is haunted while she offers a temporary home for all these dealers who said they were through with dealing every time you gave them shelter. And then this dealer takes his leave. And then sweeping up the jokers that he left behind, you find he did not leave you very much, not even laughter. Like any dealer, he was watching for the card that is so high and wild he'd never need to deal another. He was just some Joseph looking for a manger. What does that mean? The dealer waiting for that magic card that will end his quest, as though he's cursed with an itch to find what we all, on some level, hunger for, the high and wild card that wins it all. Maybe he thought she was his high and wild card, but of course she's not. She's nobody's card but her own. He's just some Joseph looking for a manger. Oh, is he Joseph? The mythic wanderer searching for a place where his pregnant wife, pregnant not by him, can safely deliver her child? This dealer may stop at the woman's shelter, but that's not the manger he's looking for. He tries somewhere else. And where is she in all this? Just left behind. And then another stranger comes for her for shelter. Who is she, then? One of the Sisters of Mercy? She is blessed or cursed with some sort of special gift, that's for sure. Attend carefully to this beautiful image of what she perceives. And while he talks his dreams to sleep, you notice there's a highway that is curling up like smoke above his shoulder. A highway that is curling up like smoke above his shoulder. This is an eerie song with the single guitar and droning voice, but suddenly it gets much more eerie. Is she the Sister of Mercy offering shelter, or is she, in fact, a stranger on her own road, the one who is wandering even though she stays in the same place? You tell him to come in, sit down, but something makes you turn around. The door is open. You can't close your shelter. You try the handle of the road. It opens. Do not be afraid. It's you, my love, you who are the stranger. Why is she the stranger? Why is she wandering? Because one event after another comes to her without preparation, without wandering, without warning. coming to her and then passing on. And this, as we've seen, is the experience of the wanderer. And there's no prepared map of the journey to help her. "Please understand," he says, "I never had a secret chart to get me to the heart of this or any other matter. And it comes to you, he never was a stranger. And you say, okay, the bridge, or someplace later. That's all. Just a vague promise that maybe later, maybe on some bridge, connecting one experience with another, maybe they'll meet again, and maybe some pattern will emerge. But who knows? That's the spirit of this wandering. Attend."
It's true that all the men you knew were dealers who said they were through with dealing every time you gave them shelter. I know that kind of man. It's hard to hold the hand of anyone who's reaching for the sky just to surrender. Who is reaching for the sky just to surrender. And then sweeping up the jokers that he left behind, you find he did not leave you very much, not even laughter. Like any dealer, he was watching for the card that is so high and wild, he'll never need to deal another. He was just some Joseph looking for a manger. He was just some Joseph looking for a manger. And then leaning on your windowsill, he'll say one day you caused his will to weaken with your love and warmth and shelter. And then taking from his wallet an old schedule of trains, he'll say, "I told you when I came I was a stranger. I told you when I came I was a stranger. But now another stranger seems to want you to ignore his dreams as though they were the burden of some other. Oh, you've seen that man before, his golden arm dispatching cards, but now it's rusted from the elbow to the finger. And he wants to trade the game he plays for shelter. Yes, he wants to trade the game he knows for shelter. Oh, you hate to watch another tired man lay down his hand like he was giving up the holy game of poker. And while he talks his dreams to sleep, you notice there's a highway that is curling up like smoke above his shoulder. It's curling just like smoke above his shoulder. You tell him to come in, sit down, but something makes you turn around. The door is open, you can't close your shelter. You try the handle of the road, it opens. Do not be afraid, it's you, my love, you who are the stranger. It is you, my love, you who are the stranger. Well, I've been waiting, I was sure we'd meet between the trains we're waiting for. I think it's time to board another. Please understand, I never had a secret chart to get me to the heart of this or any other matter. Well, he talks like this, you don't know what he's after. When he speaks like this, you don't know what he's after. Let's meet tomorrow if you choose upon the shore beneath the bridge that they are building on some endless river. Then he leaves the platform for the sleeping car that's warm. You realize he's only advertising one more shelter. And it comes to you, he never was a stranger. And you say, okay, the bridge or someplace later. And then sweeping up the jokers that he left behind, you find he did not leave you very much, not even laughter. Like any dealer, he was watching for the card that is so high and wild, he'll never need to deal another. was just some Joseph looking for a manger. He was just some Joseph looking for a manger. And leaning on your windowsill, he'll say one day you caused his will to weaken with your love and warmth and shelter. And then taking from his wallet an old schedule of trains, he'll say, I told you when I came I was a stranger. I told you when I came I was a stranger. I told you when I came
I was a stranger. And so good night from Evening Under Lamplight on Cambridge 105, Community Radio in Cambridge, with your host, Robert Louis Abrahamson, reminding you, don't be a stranger now and come back right soon. Let all your wanderings bring you each time back to the shelter of Evening Under Lamplight. Good night.